Welcome to the Play in Faith podcast, where we dive into the world of sports through the lens of optimism, inspiration, and faith. We're on a mission to infuse youth sports culture with positivity and joy while building the largest network of college Christian athlete mentors in the world. Thanks for stopping by. Enjoy today's show. Hey, everybody. It's Coach Chris with Play in Faith. I am so excited today. We have Carol McGregor from Grace College willing to share some time and some wisdom with us. A career in athletics, both playing and professionally. Just so excited to have you here today. Thank you for coming on, Carol. We really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah, so obviously you're at Grace College, an absolutely beautiful place. You guys have amazing athletic programs, but this isn't where you started out. So I'm just curious, how did you get here to Grace? Like, first, like, what are you doing now? And then kind of how did you get to this point? How'd you get here?
Oh, wow. Going back, we'll go back. We'll start when I was a wee bot. And one of my earliest memories is a Christmas present and getting my first basketball hoop. 3 years old and getting that Fisher Price plastic basketball hoop and showing the family my follow through and just starting from there and building from there. I grew up in Napanee, Indiana, so a stone's throw from Warsaw and Grace College. And thankfully, Northwood had an established basketball program. We had the great Steve Neff as the head coach during that time, but we also had a great youth program, and I think you're seeing that for yourself.
Oh, yeah, you guys coaches. Were tough draw.
Yeah. Well, but we also had coaches that were invested in the program.
Sure.
Coaches that bought into Coach Neff and wanted to see the overall program succeed. And that's one of the things that, especially within high school sports, that is kind of lacking is that developmental aspect of we're going to stay committed and we're going to buy in. And from early ages, we're going to have the fifth and sixth grade Black Swish League, and we're going to teach these kids the fundamentals, and we're going to work on what it takes to eventually be a Panther basketball player. And then we're going to end up implementing some of the foundational pieces in seventh and eighth grade basketball that you're going to eventually play and utilize when you enter high school and playing for Coach Neff or playing for whoever the head coach happens to be at this time. So I thankfully had a great basketball education during my time through the Northwood school system. And that just helped develop me. It gave me a lot of tools of this is how I would do stuff. This is how I would not do stuff if I were to ever become a coach. Because of that experience, because of the push that they gave me, I was able to go on and play Big Ten basketball at Purdue University. Sure. I will say I was also a super butthead going through. Because of that education I got on the basketball court, during high school, I was a know-it-all. I was not the easiest kid to coach. Coach Neff, I don't think I've ever said I'm sorry. I'm doing it now.
Let's
I'm sorry.
We'll get him on the podcast and see what he has to say about
it. I have to send the link directly to him.
Carol apologizes. So, I mean, if you kind of back up, so obviously, look, if you're getting recruited at a level where you are playing at Purdue, obviously, standout basketball player. Taller than average, you're 6'2", correct?
Yes.
So did you grow early? Were you 6'2 at like eighth grade? Were you kind of a late bloomer?
When did you
get tall?
I've been tall my whole life.
Okay.
And that's that. Like, I've been tall my whole life. I started seventh grade at 5'8". I started eighth grade at 6', freshman year 6'1".
Yeah, so a 6'1 kid who comes in who can play. So you were on the radar, obviously, early.
Yes, I got my first college letter from Xavier.
Go Muskies.
Eighth grade going into my freshman year.
Wow. So I'm going to give you a little grace.
Yeah. Right?
Pardon the pun. So, you know, a beautiful self-awareness. But, I mean, look, if you're getting D1 letters as a 13-year-old kid, I mean, our brains aren't even formed fully till like, what, age 24?
Yes.
So that's a lot of attention. It's a lot of acclaim, sometimes a lot of pressure, probably normal that you thought you knew a lot,
yes,
right?
Well,
I mean, you're living the dream of most athletes.
And,
you know,
to toot my own horn and pat my own back, I also found success on the volleyball court and the track and field. So I had the option and the opportunity to pursue whatever sport I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, that was a lot also. So it's one of those of God gifted me with athleticism and with talent. And if I wanted to pursue college volleyball, I could have done that. I never did club volleyball. I pursued travel basketball. Had I wanted to do track and field, I probably could have done that.
So what was your event?
I was, okay, it's the strangest combination. I was a high jumper and a shot putter.
That does not happen every single day. Those are typically very different frames.
Yes. Right?
I mean, like, but that's really wild.
It shows you my explosiveness. Yeah, does that make sense? My
athleticism. No, it's an incredibly rare combo.
Yes. And so that shout out to Kirk Huntsberger at Fairfield now. he coaches there. But that just kind of plays into the athleticism that I had. And then again, the explosiveness. I always say that I was quite explosive. It could jump quite high for a white woman.
and like, it's, I mean, you were far taller than average too.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yes. So. And so, I just could have gone anywhere, and basketball was the way that I ended up going. And again, playing Big Ten basketball, I was a forward center. And so the combination there, granted, taller than most, but not necessarily.
No, you get to a D1 level, you're playing against 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", posts routinely. Obviously, you're playing in the Big Ten.
Yes. So there had to be something that kind of set me apart to keep me playing in that position. And so my athleticism and my strength is one of those things that kind of helped me through. And then also the intelligence to play a little bit undersized, and then being able to play within a system. So growing up, having played into a system and being able to memorize plays and know, and thankfully the patience of a saint and Coach Curry.
Sure.
And the just knowledge and information that her husband, Kelly Curry, had in investing in me and allowing me to play with them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I had my background playing. During my senior year, I was so independent and I thought I could be so self-sufficient. And this was my first test of trying to figure out that you can't get anywhere in life without other people.
Sure.
And this goes back to kind of that butthead statement of, I just thought it was me. For so long, I really just thought it was me, and I didn't give enough credit to the people who helped me. God, at that time, I didn't give enough credit to.
Yeah. Are you talking sophomore year in high school or college?
It was my senior year in college.
Senior in college.
I finally told Coach Curry, I said, hey, I think I want to get into college coaching. And she said, Carol, that actually might be the perfect fit for you. Because so often, some of the issues that I had on the court was I was too analytical, and it was holding me back because I was thinking too much versus just acting
doing.
And once she figured that out, she was gung-ho. And she is actually the person that helped me secure a position at Northwestern. I was a GA there for a season, a full-time assistant then for a season after that. I moved on to Murray State. I was there for 2 years, left Murray State, moved back to the Fort Wayne area, here not too far.
Back home.
Thought I was just going to stay with my brother for 6 months, finish up my master's thesis, move on. And I stayed and coached youth basketball for 6 years. And I worked for Jim Rutt's basketball at the time and kind of reshaped how I formulated myself as a coach. Got a lot of hands-on experience running tournaments, operating tournaments, how I coached, how I evaluated players, then got back into the coaching game, spent a year at the University of St. Francis, 2 years at IPFW, and have been here at Grace since. I coached 4 years for the women's basketball team, and now I'm starting my fourth year just on the professor side. But during this time here at Grace, I've been an assistant athletic director and have had the privilege, as you know, of working with Chad Briscoe, our athletic director, who's absolutely phenomenal.
I believe he just was National NAIA Athletic Director of the Year Friday. So a couple of days ago, we saw that. So we'd like to give a shout out to all our former guests. So yeah, Chad's been wonderful helping us really connect this mission with other schools. All right, so Carol, so obviously an entire life, a career revolved around sports and athletics. I mean, obviously, you knew at a very young age, you excelled at sports, you had a lot of interest. What I find is interesting is you were playing three sports at a very high level. And I find that one of the things probably a lot of people listening to this podcast struggle with, we got a lot of parents of athletes, and it's a challenge. How do we know how to guide them, how to shepherd them, especially if they're at a smaller high school, the same 8-9 kids tend to be good at a lot of things. So there's pressure to specialize, mm-hmm. a lot of pressure. And I know you just went to a conference where they talked about some of this. So how did you deal with some of that pressure to pick a sport, or how did your family handle that? Because obviously you were good at a lot of things.
Thankfully, my father had the knowledge, education, and fortitude to be like, no, we're not going to specialize. I did play travel basketball, but I also had some bumps along the way playing travel basketball. But he also was like, there's importance to playing multiple sports. And I don't know if he could see the writing on the wall, or if he just thought it's going to help shape you as an athlete, or if he just thought overall it's going to help with your athleticism to develop. I should ask him maybe of like, why did you know this? But so much more, so many more studies are coming out that, you know, overuse injuries, it's better to develop with multiple sports. He just was very much aware, and I thank him for that. At the time, we had like the same like 5-6 athletes that kind of went through, and some of my closest friends in high school, we played all three sports together, and it was a joy to go through that process. But it was one of those two. I needed the break. Volleyball was a reprieve. And then by the time volleyball was ending, I'm like, yes, let's get to basketball. And by the time basketball was ending, it's like, yes, let's get to track. And then by the time track was ending, it's like, all right, let's get back on the basketball court and refine those skills again and go back. And it was just a cycle to go through. And it helped so much to kind of have those seasons and then get those breaks and get back to the season. But the greatest thing through it all is you still stayed active. It wasn't one of those of like you're becoming a couch potato and you're having to become back in shape through all the time. You're still staying active. You're still staying involved. Yes, you may not be in basketball shape, but you didn't completely lose your athleticism or your skill during that time. And you might get shots up once or twice a week. You're just not doing it every single day.
Perfect. Yeah, there's a lot of transferable skills with some of the athleticism. And one of the things parents will say to us, and I've even seen it, where you're seeing kids as young as 6th or 7th grade being approached by some of these travel coaches of everything's D1, D1, D1. Hey, you want to go D1? You need to be playing year round. Come join our program. It's only, you know, $600 million or whatever the astronomical cost is. You know, just sell your car and come here. So would you have any advice for parents that are going through that? Because obviously you still got to the apex of college sports and didn't necessarily give up those other sports. So what would you say to like a 6th or 7th grade parent who is getting some of these conversations from, you know, maybe some different coaches they have to pick now?
Trust your gut. In all reality, like, I would pray about it. Like, and you're the ones that are responsible for your student and your child. And I look at them. One, are they emotionally mature enough to handle this? Personal experience this past year with my 7-year-old daughter. We started her in swim for the first time, and we wanted it to be enjoyable so that she could grow and develop. And I started pushing her too much, and it started becoming a labor. And
it's so hard.
Yeah. And for myself, I don't want to be forcing her to do it because of myself. And at the end, I'm making her go to swim practice 3-4 nights a week. At the beginning of it, we made the agreement that it should be twice. And I'm allowing the pressure of seeing other parents making their children do it more often. And that's burning out my kid. You need to be responsible for your kid. What can they do or what can't they do? If you have the financial means and you can find that balance, or if your kid is begging for it and they want it.
Yeah, that's the big driver, right?
Yeah. Like if they're asking for it and they're staying on top of it, because like that's the big thing. If they're emotionally ready for it and they're wanting it and they're asking for it and you can make that compromise. I mean, my husband looked at me like, we're the parents. We're the ones that make the money. What do we do? And I was like, we need to have this conversation with our daughter because we want to show her how decisions are made. And we want to talk to her about making commitments also. Sure. And so once you make a commitment to a team, you need to live out that commitment. And so, yes, even at 7, we're trying to instill that in our daughter and have that conversation and go through that process. So you as the parent, you're the only one that can truly make that decision. One, you don't want to put yourself in a financial position that you're going to be hurting. So two, like, is it feasible? But are there other opportunities that if your child really wants to do it, could you figure it out? I would honestly say I got my scholarship at Purdue because I went to their camp. And again, going back to that butthead comment, I was so angry at my dad for making me go to this Purdue camp because I was too good for camps at that point. Because,
I thought it was going to go the other way. Like, you just didn't want to put in the time and effort or you were feeling tired.
No, I thought it was too good. I knew everything about basketball. I don't need to go back to, like, elementary school camps. Thank God.
They found you.
Thank God. Yeah. They saw me play.
I feel like they might have found you anyway.
I don't know.
No, you're exactly right, though. I mean, like, getting to some of these exposure camps. And I love the idea of really having that conversation with your kid.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I know my daughter's a couple years ahead of you, and we finally broke down and let her play because she was begging for it. I mean, we'd be on the way to school, and she would ask me for three things she can do to start varsity as a ninth grader. I'm like, well, you're in elementary school, so pump the brakes, right? I mean, she was that intense, and we're like, you know what? She loves it. Let's go. I have a nephew who's been playing travel baseball. I mean, just a gift from God, right? I mean, he's like trying out for like the U.S. Olympic team. Loves it. Never burn out, but it was his choice. Mm-hmm. And I do see some kids that are like that and wonderful, and then there's others that are, you know, being pushed and pushed and pushed against their will. And good for you guys for at least recognizing that it's hard.
It is
so hard to resist when you see the other kids doing it. And mm-hmm. and then obviously, for a little context, your husband is an athlete, a large fella,
6'9".
Your daughter's probably going to be a big, talented athlete with a lot of options. I get it.
Yes.
Right? There's that pressure to keep up and to, you don't want them to get behind.
Yes. But we also go back to, like, there's so many lessons that you can learn through sport.
Agreed.
And we don't want to miss those lessons also. But those lessons are going to naturally come along the way. And as I said, like, just sitting down and having the conversation with our daughter about what is commitment? What does it look like to support a team? We even just had the conversation of swim. If swim is what you want to do right now, what does it look like to be a good teammate? Because swim is oftentimes very individualistic.
Sure.
But if you're swimming against a teammate in this race for this meet, how do you make each other better? You have to swim as hard as you possibly can because you might beat her this race. Historically, she may always beat you, but this might be the day. And when you get out of the water, you give each other a high five and you say, nice race.
Iron sharpens iron.
Yes, precisely that. Yeah. Because every day that you go at each other and you're going to make each other better. It's going to make the team better, and it's just going to help everyone evolve. And so it's one of those of, like, it's going to happen. It's going to naturally occur. But unfortunately or fortunately, my poor daughter and my poor son have me looking through it as a former athlete, but because I've been so trained and conditioned now as a coach, mm-hmm. that so much of my parenting is coming from a coaching lens, as well as, like, how can we spin this into a lesson? Or how are we 1% better today?
Right. Their dad is their coach, and then I've spent the last 20 years on stage doing exactly that. So
the motivational speech.
Oh, man, yeah, there's been a few blank stares in my fifth grade locker room. Like, that was a really good one. Just maybe not the right target audience. Yeah, we try. But I think that what I really love about having conversations with you and these people I'm getting to talk to, and just kind of the mission, even with our mentors, is, look, we're going to talk sports. We're going to pair them up with somebody who can show them what it takes to get to the next level or their level of desire athletically. But there's so much more. Mm-hmm. It's the best dress rehearsal for life is athletics, but only if we use it properly. So we're really cognizant of not just the physical, but being a good teammate, being a good leader, being resilient. How do we deal with adversity? How do we lift others up? And ultimately, our sport is what we're doing, but it's not the entirety of who we are.
Yes.
And I feel like the higher the level you go, the harder that can be sometimes to grapple a hold of. So I'm just curious, at any point in your career, you know, at Purdue or even in high school, was that a challenge of finding, just remembering that your sport is important, but that you have more worth and more value outside of just the basketball court? Did that ever become a challenge?
Did it ever become a challenge?
I guess, was the pressure ever, how did you deal with some of the pressure, right? I mean, it's a pretty big time level of play where, you know, for a lot of athletes, good game equals good day, bad day, bad practice equals bad day. You know, how do you avoid some of that trap, I guess?
As I was preparing to come and talk to you today, I kind of always fall back on, like, I think my power verse, my, like, life mission, right? It's the greatest commandment of love God, you know, with all your heart, mind, and soul, but to love others as yourself. And so it's one of those of just, like, as an athlete, if all you're thinking about is your performance, you're not loving others. And so you have to get outside of yourself. You have to get outside of your mind. And if you're just so focused on your own performance, especially as a team player, like as a team sport, basketball is a team sport. Like there's five people on the court. There's Absolutely. Not one of you. And so if you're sucking, like you deserve to get pulled off, right? Like, you have to focus.
And,
yeah. And you have to get outside of yourself and you have to change your mindset. You have to change what's happening. And it really comes down to like, sorry, Anna from Frozen just started playing in my brain about like.
You're in that stage of life. We've just progressed out of that one. Yes. Now it's just miserable YouTube videos.
But, right. Of just the next right thing of, and so it's actually a sports psychology concept of like the next play.
Oh yeah. Next play mentality.
The next play. But the parenting phase of life is the next right thing from Anna.
That works. We'll take it.
But it's the next play mentality of like, okay, I could have turned the ball over, but what am I going to do next on defense? Yes. Am I going to get that rebound? Am I going to work with my teammates to get the stop? Is my communication going to pick up or am I going to go internal? Mm-hmm. So it's that next play, that next thought process, because the only thing that I can control are the thoughts in my head and then my next actions. And so those are the things that kind of helped. Did it take a lot of time to get there? Yes. I do have to say, thankfully, God kind of wired me to love sports psychology, to love psychology in general. And so when we started working with a sports psychologist, it really helped me. I also have, unfortunately, maybe because I was so gifted so young, kind of a natural fortitude that I just got over stuff pretty quickly. And I didn't want a lot of stuff hang on me too much because I was just
sports.
Like, yeah, well, because I'm
translates
good. And then
to
it's
everything.
Gonna, yeah, like it's just gonna. And so I just had an unnaturally high level of confidence in myself.
I think that's good though, right? I mean, as long as it doesn't manifest as
as being too arrogant,
nasty
yes.
to others. I mean, I think that's one of the traits we all pray our kids will adopt. That you know, one of the things we tell our girls is, does the world impact you, or do you impact the world? Mm-hmm. Because you get to choose.
Absolutely.
And that choice is the most direct impact on your life. Mm-hmm. People that choose to impact the world rather than be impacted by it then tend to get good results. Mm-hmm. But if outside circumstances control you, well, I can assure you, you'll get what you expect.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So I think sports is really good at teaching that. So I always try to pester people. My youngest daughter, she's going to hate these when they're archived because she's eventually going to be a young adult.
Or she's
and not
gonna
like
love
these.
It because there's a Audible journal.
Exactly. So I always ask her, I say, give me a couple of questions. If you got to sit here and talk to somebody who has had your journey, because I asked her this morning on the way to school, you know, what's your dream? She's like, you already know I'm going to play at Notre Dame. And it's not I want to, it's mm-hmm. I'm going. I said, you know what? Let's go. Go for it. I'm here to support you along the way. And so I'm going to talk to someone today who has had that basic same journey. Of having that goal, get into the same spot, what do you want to know? And so her first question was, at what age did you start doing more focused basketball workouts independently? Right.
Ooh.
And when I say independently, I have kids some of the time, like, I practice every day. I was like, no, you shot underhand horse shots with your grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's fine. It's sports is supposed to be fun, but you didn't go out and get 200 makes.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't out focusing on a workout. So at what point did that become part of your life?
Ooh. being intentional with it. We always had a basketball hoop in our driveway. And so, again, with my dad loving basketball, he made it happen. He wanted us to have that resource. So we always had a basketball hoop in the driveway. And it was one of those of being a firstborn daughter, perfection is one of those things. So I unfortunately missed like the goof around gene. I never really did it. And that,
I understand.
Like, I don't know. I probably drove my teammates nuts with it because I'm very much of the mindset of get your work done, go as hard as you humanly can. And then I'm not hanging out usually after the workout. I'm getting out because I went as hard as I could. and I got my stuff done. I probably, so fifth, sixth grade, as I said, the Black Swish Leagues is mm-hmm. when we probably first started that. Is probably when I started getting a little bit more serious.
And that's your school team. That's with your yes. high school theater program.
Okay. Yes. Sure. And so all the little girls in the Napanee Wakarusa area could play in that. It's probably when I got a little bit more serious. It would be like, hey, Dad, can you come rebound with me? Or can we go get some shots up? But I also, so as I said, I started like with my follow through at age 3. So I was very meticulous too. And so it was very intentional of getting my shots up, of doing mic in, doing bang shots, doing.
Because you were playing post yes. primarily.
Yes. But also.
If you played today, they'd probably get you pick and pop out on the wing.
Oh, but. Yeah. and I can promise you it'd look beautiful.
Let's go.
But also just getting the elbow jumpers, the short corner shots, like, because yeah. I was, eye cuts were very important.
Sure. So were you counting makes or attempts?
Was I counting makes or attempts?
We'll say a lot of, I mean, it was a lot kids of, go back and forth. Is it I'm getting 10 makes or I'm getting 20 shots up? Like, what are we doing?
I would usually end up going for makes, but I also did this weird thing for myself that I would kind of have this hope and goal of like, so again, I'm doing layman shooting where I'm going like elbow to elbow. But if I have a miss, I'm chasing down my miss and I have to shoot it from wherever I rebound it from. So it's helping me pursue the ball and try to get it as close to the basket as possible. So that way I'm not having to shoot it from mm-hmm. out in the grass, you
yeah,
know?
Sure.
Cause then I could potentially miss it and have to keep chasing the ball. So, I one thing that helped me a ton on being able to read my misses,
yeah.
Or to read the flight of a ball to know where rebounds are going. But then too, also helped with my determination to go after missed shots. So then I like it would be mixed. I was always looking at trying to make as many as I could because as a post player, your shooting percentage was so vital, right? You're
yeah.
like as a post player, you should be shooting like 60 some
oh, yeah,
percent,
yeah.
if not more, based on your shot selection. So, yes, based off makes, but I was also just working a lot on those little skills.
Nice. Yeah, you guys, you did grow up in a wonderful feeder program. So I'm coaching with an OPS, like elite team, and we've got 3 girls from your alma mater to play yep. for me. And I've only had them for 3 weeks, and I absolutely love all 3 of them. They are unbelievable kids. And they're going to be really good ball players, and we're going to have trouble beating them when they get to high
yeah.
school. But no, they're absolutely amazing kids, and you can just tell they're being really well coached when I'm not around.
Yeah.
Like my part might be the negative, but they're being really, really well coached. All right, so my daughter's last question, that I know I'm running up on time, so I'm going to have to let you enjoy your day here. My daughter's curious, if you played travel ball beyond just Black Swish, and mm-hmm. If so, like what club did you play for?
Oh, gosh. Way back in the day, I played for Indiana Storm. It was kind of a one-off type team that
okay.
just got a bunch of people together. AAU was not what it is today.
Yeah, the industrial sports complex had not quite reared up
yes.
at that point. Sure.
You and I were just discussing this
yeah.
before we started recording of just what youth sport has turned into, and it was not what it is today. The options were not available the same way that it is currently. There's so many more options now
yes.
than what there were. There's so many more tournaments now. Traveling even with your school teams to play in the off season, it wasn't a thing back in the day. So yeah, that's really it.
Okay.
Like, and you and I were talking, and even as I said, one of the greatest things that I've encouraged even the kids when I was coaching travel basketball is if you're interested in a school, your daughter wants to play at Notre Dame, go to the Notre Dame camps, get
sure.
sign up for the elite camps, sign up for other schools too, because the more you learn or the way you hear basketball taught in different ways, something might just click, right? As a basketball coach, one of the biggest challenges for me was so many kids learned through different ways mm-hmm. and different areas. Like how I'm saying it may not be connecting. So I need to figure out a different way of saying it. So some of these kids might finally get a skill because they hear it a different way. Mm-hmm. Or you may connect with a different coach. So right now, Notre Dame may be the dream, but she might actually really like Stanford.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those of like, don't limit yourself and expand it and just put yourself out there.
So I'm going to give you one last question here too, because I think it's a good segue, or like, obviously she's very young,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, like 9 and 10 year olds, like, what are you going to do when you grow up? You're a fireman, an astronaut, or you're going to play point guard for the Pacers, right? And I mean, hey, maybe she does get there. I mean, blessed are those who dream big dreams, right? And I do everything I can to help her get there. But also realize that at that level we're talking about, you'd be one of the 20, 25 best players in the entire country if you're going to be on that kind of radar. There are so many amazing avenues to continue playing beyond high school. You're sitting at one of them now. So, you know, as you're kind of balancing that career, look, if D1, like, that was your path, then fantastic. If that's where it takes you, that's amazing. There's a lot of places. So let's give a plug to your amazing college here. What's the best thing about playing a sport at Grace?
Ooh, best thing about playing at Grace. I would have to say the Christian mission and the coaches. I mean, we have tremendous leadership with Coach Briscoe, and he has hired great coaches. And you will not find a coaching staff that loves and pours into their athletes as much as these coaches do. And they are just on mission to change the lives of their student athletes. They all have their own individual and unique personalities, and God has gifted them in so many unique capacities. And it is such a joy. And I just, every single one I love so dearly. And it's such a pleasure. Like, it is my favorite thing in the entire world to work with these coaches. And it's such a blessing.
Yeah, I think it's funny when you say they're all on mission. How I know that you guys are on mission is that I've been blessed to talk to so many of you. And everyone says, we are on mission. Mm-hmm. That is not what you get at every athletic program. And hopefully the pod doesn't get redundant, because I said told this to Chad too, but it's a good compliment and you deserve to hear it. Both my daughters went to camp here, and not just the two of them, but like a dozen or so more of, I say, my girls. Yeah. Like, I coach them, but they're not my biological kids. And after camp, we asked them all, like, what was your favorite part of camp? And a lot of them won some awards. Some of their teams did well. Some of them had excellent camps. And almost to a kid, it was the Devos.
Yeah.
The Devos in the evening. And it just really helps solidify our mission that athletic glory is amazing. It's a wonderful goal. But man, oh man, we're learning so much more when we get on the court, on the pitch, on the field, whatever it is. So thank you for spending some time with us today.
No, thank you for having me.
Thank you for what you guys are doing in the community and what you're pouring into our athletes. It is an absolute blessing.
No, thank you again.
All right. Thanks, Carol. And best of luck this season. We're going to be praying for you and all your teams.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for tuning in to the Playing Faith podcast. If you love what you heard, please take a moment to rate our show and share it with your friends and fellow athletes. Together, we can spread the joy and positivity that youth sports deserves. And be sure to visit PlayingFaith.com for more fantastic resources. We're on a mission to build a vibrant community of Christian athlete mentors that are not just a voice your athlete will listen to, but one they should. Until next time, keep playing in faith.